Well, back at the end of last year in Paris with the COP21, whatever that stands for, climate talks, at which, in the words of socialist worker, the heads of state at the COP21 climate change talks in Paris know that climate change is one of the most urgent problems facing humanity. Now, this is a symbolic change, at least from previous climate talks, in that for once they have actually realised that there is actually a problem which needs addressing. And it's a testament to the environmental movement, the environmental protests and direct action, that the world leaders have finally conceded this. So, what is climate change? Well, sorry for most of you will already know anyway, but climate change is caused by the so-called greenhouse effect, which is in turn caused by so-called greenhouse gases, the main one being carbon dioxide, although there are others. And these greenhouse gases trap in the sun's heat, they trap it in the atmosphere, and in doing so warm the earth up. Now, a certain level of greenhouse effect is both natural and beneficial, because the earth would be uninhabitable otherwise. It would get too cold at night and too hot during the day. But the number of greenhouse gases is increasing, dangerously increasing, as the carbon-based fossil fuels, that's coal, oil and gas, are burnt. React with the oxygen in the air to form carbon dioxide. So the amount of heat trapped is increasing, and so the Earth's temperature is rising. And the threat from global warming is huge. A socialist worker points out, global average surface temperatures have already risen by 1 degree since before the industrial age, and another degree, that would make 2 degrees of warming, would dramatically increase the risk of passing tipping points, which could trigger feedback mechanisms such as the release of methane from the Arctic ice, which would in turn create more greenhouse gases and more global warming. And this would lead to catastrophic and irreversible climate change. Yet, we are currently on track for 4 degrees of warming by the end of the century, according to a 2012 report by the World Bank. And the impact on food stocks, the loss of ecosystems and biodiversity, and the rise in sea level would be immense. And this isn't just something for the future. Oh God, no, it is happening now. We're already seeing the frightening effects of climate change, as Martin Empson wrote on the 1 million climate jobs website. Tens of thousands of people have had to evacuate their homes, suffered days without power, and seen their homes and businesses destroyed as storms repeatedly hit the country. In the latest bout of flooding, thousands of people in Manchester, Leeds and York have been hit, sometimes with the worst floods ever, as rivers broke banks. And since then, the flooding continued unabated, with more floods on Boxing Day and beyond. And this all comes on top of previous devastating floods in Cumbria. In fact, there's been loads of flooding over not just this winter period as each storm hit, but also a couple of years ago we saw the dreadful floods down in Cornwall. And the fact that each storm is now considered bad enough for them to have actually been given names, a la American hurricanes, is testament to the increasing ferocity of winter storms, thanks to global warming. And in other countries, it's been far worse. I mean, also, over Christmas, it wasn't reported so much in the Western media, but there's been devastating floods in South America. This is due to the El Niño, which is a sea current dependent on sea temperature and therefore influenced by climate change. And either last year or the year before, either way, pretty damn recently, in the Philippines, Typhoon Haiyan caused a massive loss of life. And Bangladesh, a low-lying country in the first place, is often battered by cyclones of increasing strength, causing worse and worse flooding and massive loss of life. And apart from Britain, other developed Western countries don't escape unscathed either. For example, America, which is responsible for most of the greenhouse gas emissions. Look at the devastation and loss of life caused there by Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans and Superstorm Sandy in New York, both over the last 10 years or so. And there's the increasing frequency and ferocity of tornadoes in the Midwestern US. And more recently, indeed December, there's been severe weather across the southern US in the form of rainstorms and floods. And as the sea level continues to rise, entire low-level countries, such as the Maldives, face disappearing below sea level, i.e. entire countries are going to disappear. And while these storms and floods are affecting much of the world, other parts of the world face the polar opposite, namely droughts and famine, leading potentially to mass starvation. Not to mention an increase in forest fires. I mean, also over the Christmas period, we saw forest fires in the news in Australia. Now, so, at COP21, FEDUS world leaders did make some welcome promises to deal with global warming. A socialist worker says, some 180 countries have submitted plans for getting their carbon emissions down, supposed to keep global warming below 2 degrees. And after 20 years of trying, the UN negotiators aimed to finally reach a legally binding global agreement, although much of it wasn't legally binding in the end. Although for a change, even the US were on board. US President Barack Obama said he was optimistic about reaching a deal. The bad news is, though, such a deal would have to then go through the Senate, which is led by Republicans, who are in bed with big oil, and therefore a lot of them are climate change deniers. And this isn't the only reason why the COP21 agreements are doomed to fail. For starters, the pledges are woefully inadequate. Even if countries stick to them, global emissions will hit 43 billion tonnes a year by 2030. 2.5 times too high to stay within the carbon budget target that's expected to give a 66% chance of keeping below 2 degrees. In other words, even if they keep within target, it's not forced to save us, and the way things are going, it's likely to be 2.5 times that. And even within the budget, warming could go as high as 6 degrees by 2100. That's going to be absolutely devastating. Now, all this is scary enough, but in any case, the countries aren't even sticking to these agreements, which, as I say, in the end, weren't legally binding anyway. The European Union and at least six other major economies already threatened their commitments with new coal plants. Some developing countries made their pledges conditional on aid from richer countries. And richer countries have a nasty habit of not stumping up cash which they're promised. And here in the UK, well, last year, we all know how we got the new Tory government, which this time was a full-blown pure Tory government without even the pretense of caring which they gave when there were the condemns, including they don't give a toss about the environment. Despite the fact that David Cameron boasted that Britain is one of 75 countries that already have legally binding climate change legislation and are thriving as a result, the fact is the Tories are hell-bent on making it easier for their posh supporters to oppose wind farms, despite the fact that wind is the most plentiful, let alone the least polluting, supply of energy in the UK, and the UK is the best place in Europe to have wind, despite the fact that Germany has more wind farms, Britain would be the best place for them because our wind is the most consistent. And also, the Tories want to remove subsidies for green electricity generation, which will adversely affect not just wind power, but also solar energy. And cuts to research will hamper research into other types of green energy, such as tidal energy, which again Britain is well suited for, and geothermal, and also hamper research into energy storage, which is vital if we're to reach a situation where we can be self-sufficient in energy when the wind doesn't blow, when there's a period of high pressure. If we had energy storage, we could store the energy created during things like Storm Frank. The thing is that all this is leading to a continuing reliance on fossil fuels, the burning of which, as I've explained, releases greenhouse gases, notably carbon dioxide. And we're not just talking about conventional fossil fuels such as coal, oil and gas either, the ones extracted by conventional methods. No, the last few years have seen a boom in a new form of shale gas extraction, i.e. fracking. Now, what is fracking? Socialist Worker explains it probably the best. The relatively new technique of fracking shale rocks to get at the gas and oil inside has created a fossil fuel boom in the US and here in the UK. Shale gas now accounts for almost a third of gas consumed in the US. Gas prices have halved in 5 years. The US is projected to become the world's biggest gas producer by 2015 and its biggest oil producer by 2020. Part of this has linked in with attempts to try to bypass the instability of the Middle East, and probably just as importantly to try and bypass gas from Russia. The trouble is though that fracking, it comes at a heavy price. There's earthquakes, water pollution from the chemicals used, including cancer causing chemicals, the massive use of water for the fracking means an increased risk of drought in fracking areas, and most dangerously of all, it means the increased supply of and increased reliance of greenhouse gas producing fossil fuels. And indeed, to make matters even worse, fracking also releases methane, a greenhouse gas 25 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. Now, this doesn't bother the government. They're hell-bent on supporting fracking. I mean, they've changed the trespass law to allow fracking companies to drill underneath people's houses. Now, this was the same government, remember, that criminalised squatting. That involved a change in the trespass law. And yet now they've changed the trespass law the other way to make it easier for fracking companies to avoid being done for trespass. One law for the rich, one for the poor. Who knew? Now the government has also opened up the licence bidding process to frack shale gas in about half of Britain, including Derbyshire, including protected areas such as national parks like the Peak District. Now technically they can't actually have the fracking wells inside the Peak District, but what they can do is have them next door to Peak District and drill underneath, which is just as bad when it comes to water pollution and what have you. And a licence has been granted for fracking near works will also mean the risk of fracking under Clumber Park. That's been reported by Worksop Guardian. Now, Clumber Park is a place where in summer as loads of kids go paddling in water, so do I really need to spell out the risks of the water pollution there? So, now, another thing is, alongside the summit, the Sustainable Innovation Forum seeks market-driven technological solutions to climate change. And billionaires such as Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook and Richard Branson also held a Mission Innovation meeting. Now, we all know we can't trust the bloody fat cats, and this idea likewise is doomed to fail because the problem isn't lack of technologies anyway. The problem is how society uses them. And bosses like Zuckerberg, Gates and Branson are part of that problem, and so is the market. There's been much emphasis on making renewables cheaper than fossil fuels, but the fact is that renewables in a lot of cases already are cheaper than fossil fuels. As the magazine New Scientist pointed out recently, in a free market, wind and solar energy could get too cheap to be profitable. Now, I'm going to explain later how wind has already become too cheap at certain times to be economical under capitalism. Thing is, this could discourage capitalists from investing in renewables, and even if they do invest in renewables, it won't necessarily cut fossil fuel use under capitalism, because the way the market works is, if demand for fossil fuels start to fall, they get cheaper as producers try to sell as much as they can, which may even mean more fossil fuels end up getting sold. And this is the overarching reason why capitalism can never save the planet. It's not simply that capitalism and the power of big oil and the car industry encourages the likes of environmentally damaging private cars, lorries and air travel, although that is a big area in which consumption of energy could be reduced, obviously. I mean, if there was proper investment into affordable public transport, such as upgrading the existing railways instead of the white elephant status symbol that is HS2, so there's a frequent, reliable bus and rail service, we could massively increase the number of people travelling by public transport instead of by car. I mean, after all, who likes being stuck in traffic jams? But this would entail the renationalisation of the buses and the rail companies to stop any investment simply disappearing into profits and share dividends for shareholders and obscene pay rises for bosses like Brian Suter, the arch-homophobic boss of Stagecoach. And another big way to reduce energy consumption is to embark on a programme of properly insulating homes and passing legislation to force new houses to be built, ideally new council houses obviously, with good insulation, energy efficient boilers, low energy lighting etc, and preferably built facing south so solar panels can be fitted and would be fitted. Now, why isn't that likely to happen? Because, of course, that'd piss off the big six energy companies who the Tories are in bed with. And the big six energy companies, to properly stop them giving Static 20 serious moves to protect the planet. We should nationalise them. And then, not only could they be made to produce energy by far more environmentally friendly techniques, the price of the energy they produce could also actually be brought down, because the money wouldn't be going on profits for shareholders and what have you. And when there's socially planned energy generation, centrally planned, more use could be made of energy efficient forms of generation, such as combined heat and power, in which waste heat from heating homes, factories, schools, etc., could then be taken to produce electricity instead of just being dumped into the atmosphere. And nor is it simply that the capitalist system encourages the accumulation of the greatest profit by the production of goods in the very cheapest way, even if this is the most environmentally damaging way, although of course that does happen most of the time. But even when energy is produced using renewables, the capitalist system's competition, that includes competition between nation states, means it's not distributed in a rational way. Bloomberg reported recently that Germany's wind farms are now producing so much electricity that one of its grid managers is paying generators in neighbouring Denmark to shut down to keep its network from overloading. And Germany's shift to renewables has more than doubled its wind power over the past decade, but investment in power lines to move that energy across the country has failed to keep up. Crazy. And even more wastefully, there's irresponsible marketing by companies who continue to produce energy-inefficient fridges, cookers, even old-school light bulbs are still being produced, which they sell more cheaply, but with a higher-end cost of energy used by the often poor consumers, let alone the cost to the environment. And another major factor is the competition between companies, which leads to the environmentally harmful spectacle of lorries crossing each other on the motorway, carrying identical products made by different companies. If production of each good was socially planned, each good would be produced as locally as possible and distributed over as short a distance as possible. But more importantly still is the capitalist disease of overproduction, as described by Marx. Every company, when the demand of a product goes up, has the aspirations of supplying the entire increase in demand for each good produced, which means that there's a massive overproduction. Now, not only does that lead to oversupply of goods, the dropping in price and people thrown out of work, it also means that all of the energy and resources wasted on producing these excess goods. What a freaking waste. Now, while the COP21 agreement was a small step in the right direction in that the world leaders, like I say, have at least realised that something has got to be done, whether they actually intend to do anything or not, it's going to need much more than that to stop catastrophic climate change. Because, as per usual, workers still get responsible dumped on us. We must change our light bulbs, eat less meat, insulate our homes and use public transport, or else it's our fault. But the fact is, climate change is a social problem, not a collection of individual problems. Now, our choice is limited by what's on offer. Few people choose to spend hours in traffic jams or struggle to heat badly insulated homes. And even if we try to consume responsibly, corporations will still produce irresponsibly and spend billions on advertising to create a demand. But while we can't change much as individuals, we sure as hell, if we organise as workers, can change things. I mean, protests still took place near the talks in Paris, despite the French state having banned any protests as part of the state of emergency following November's terror attacks by Daesh. And here in the UK, over the past few years, we've seen protests against fracking, which have already stopped plans to drill for gas here in Gaylo, protests by Calo against gas extraction, and direct action in Lancashire has put an end to Quadrilla's plans to frack near Blackpool. And it is this, not meetings by world leaders, that can make a real difference.